Steve, thanks so much. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's the Thursday edition of the show. As always, we can be easily reached at 312-981-7200. That's our call line. That's our text line.
And we're raising some money today, too. So we need your help to participate in our Day of Giving to benefit the victims of Hurricane Harvey. Of course, we go home to our warm, dry homes every night, and I can't stop watching all the coverage and all the videos going on. And this was actually a couple of days ago. There was a woman who was interviewed at a shelter with her daughter by her side, I think two daughters, and it was live on CNN. We have had to edit it, but a reporter was interviewing a woman who gave her name as Danielle about what she has been through.
Let me introduce you to Danielle here. Danielle, you just arrived. Share with us how you were rescued.
Some guys had called our phone and asked us where we were. We was waiting for the police for like 36 hours and they never came. And we was waiting at the home. We did the white flags and everything and nobody came. But then somebody had called the phone after we decided to leave the house and we had walked to the gas station with the kids. And then they had called and came and picked us up. But we had been there like 5 days with no food and no lights and nobody came. Like nobody came.
Now you're with your children. We've heard of stories of mothers trying to save their children from the rushing waters. Can you tell us how
we
that was?
Through 4 feet of water to go get them food on the first day. Yeah, that's a lot of s***. But y'all sitting here, y'all trying to interview people during their worst times. Like, that's not the smartest thing to do. Like, people are really breaking down and y'all sitting here with cameras and microphones trying to ask us what the f*** is wrong with us.
So
you really trying to understand it with the microphone still in my face, with me shivering cold, with my kids wet, and you still putting the microphone in my face.
Sorry. Rosa Flores, it sounds like you've got a very upset family there. We're
going to
take a break from that.
I have a couple of things that I would like to throw out there. First of all, you and I watched this, and the woman named Danielle with her two children standing there was standing there and knew she was going to be interviewed and answered a question when asked and then got very frustrated.
I'm no expert, but it sounds like just displaced anger. She's very upset, obviously, over what she and her family's experiencing. She's taking it out on the reporter whose questions were all fair questions. Every one of the questions were fair questions.
But when someone shows they're upset, and that's why, Steve, I want you in on this too. We were talking about this off the air. You are a professional. I couldn't do that. I couldn't interview people. And I know that's what we as viewers want to see, our actualities like that. But when you see some resistance, is that the reporter did go, oh, I'm sorry, and did yet keep the microphone there.
She apologized a couple of times.
But isn't that when you go, I'm sorry to bother you, and you walk away?
Well, yeah. It was a live shot, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that makes it a little harder. If you were interviewing someone just to gather sound or reaction, you know, then you're like, I get it. I'm very sorry. But, you know, she was still, not that she shouldn't have stopped or turned, but it makes it harder when you're live on the air, too, and the person continues to talk.
Yeah, I mean, Danielle started out answering the questions, and Kevin's suggestion was, you know, maybe all of a sudden it's really just hit her as she heard herself describing
I'm
what
sure
she went
it.
Through. It's like, this is an ordeal. They're shivering there. But then why stand by the reporter?
Well, you've been done that, right, where something big happens and you don't quite understand it until you
absolutely.
Start to say it out loud and you kind of melt down a little bit. I mean, I'm sure that's what happened.
And there are people that you can get to talk. I mean, there's always someone who will say something, and there are people that really are uncomfortable. I just feel like at the moment when the woman started getting a little upset, perhaps the reporter should have just kind of, you know, sorry to disturb you. We are live reporting, you know, like grabbed it back.
But
that's my only thought.
As soon as she sensed any resistance, so what more than likely went on before the interview is somebody approached this woman and said, we're with CNN, you know, we're obviously doing a report, we want to talk to you. She had the option then there saying, nah, I'm not comfortable doing that, but she opted to wait and be interviewed.
It does seem like that.
But this reporter, Melissa Flores, as soon as she sensed resistance, she apologized twice. The first time was immediately. As soon as the woman said, and here you are pushing a camera in my face and a microphone, she apologized immediately.
But put the microphone right back.
The woman was still talking, or she kept talking, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a really,
you know what? It's a terrible time.
It is.
It's a terrible time for everyone down there, and things like this are going to happen. They just are.
But we've all seen this on the news. There are times where something horrendous happens like this. You know, a kid will get hit by a bus, and you'll see a reporter say, "How did you feel when you saw your kid get hit by the bus?" And then the parent goes, "How did I feel when I saw my kid get hit by a bus?" You know, because it's a ridiculous question.
It is.
You know what, though, Bill? That's not really the reaction that happens. More often than not, the person answers it.
Oh,
you know,
almost always the person answers it.
And that's
it.
One of the things. It's done more in TV than radio. One of the things I never would have liked about, you know, going into victims' homes and talking to people, I don't quite understand that, especially kids. You know, I cringe when I see a reporter asking an 8-year-old to respond to something.
Right. Right.
But aren't that's my question
almost.
Too? But isn't it their job though too? See, that's why I
not
have
from
just
an 8-year-old. You know,
mixed emotions.
An 8-year-old's not going to have a lot to add to it, and they're processing it, and I don't think there's much value in that. But
I don't know what this woman, Melissa Flores at CNN, I have no idea what she could have done differently. I mean, she was there to cover
up the interview at that point.
But she is trying to. I mean, she does. She apologizes so early on, and then that second apology, and then the anchor realizes it's getting awkward and out of hand and just, you know, summarizes it as quickly as he can. But you could tell she feels like, I am kind of invading this woman's space, but that lady had the option of saying no from the beginning.
I just feel, and, you know, again, I couldn't do that, and I do respect reporters that can. I'm not against Melissa Flores here.
Mm-hmm.
I just think at the one point when the woman swore, it's like at that point you go, okay, this woman's really upset. I got to take it back and wrap it up. Because she did keep saying, I'm sorry, and put the microphone back, and then the woman named Danielle was like, yeah, you say you're sorry, but you're putting the microphone back in my face. And then she swears again, and she goes, and the microphone's still there. I mean, it was a weird situation, but I think at some point it is live, Steve, and you're right, but at some point you have to improvise and say, sorry to have disturbed you, we are here
back
live
here
the at
studio.
The yeah
but
or,
I think she was trying to do that, right?
Well,
so
I thought she was trying to do that.
She said sorry a few times. Would just imagine you might have reacted the same way had she then just turned her back on that woman and said back to you, Biff.
Yeah,
you know, that wouldn't have been awkward as well. I just think it's hard to judge people in these situations, and it, you know, it's just something that happened.
She's experienced so much in the last 4 or 5 days, and you know, we all have some sort of a sensor in us that goes, I'm on live television, I better give them what they want. But then at some point, as she was recounting it, she's realizing what a desperate place she's in right now.
You're right, though. I mean, there's something in all of us, like, they're asking us, we better talk.
Yeah.
There is something there for a minute, and then she heard herself running through all the things that she and her girls went through, and then it's like, wait a minute.
It got pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this, we'll continue this and other discussions next. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill, and it's Wendy and WGN. Is it too early to ask, because I would be asking this question constantly if I was in Texas, how soon before things could possibly get back to normal? Can anyone even estimate that? Is that even a possibility to estimate when things can be back to normal again?
Have things, did I read that waters are starting to recede a little bit, but it still seems like they're weeks away.
Well, they are in Houston, but I don't think that's the case in Beaumont and others, you know, where they've had 20 inches of rain in the past 48 hours or so.
Awful.
I keep reading stories, and I keep wanting to help, and all day today we're asking WGN radio listeners to participate in our Day of Giving to benefit the victims of Hurricane Harvey. And really, we can't do anything other than help financially. I don't know where to send goods, so the best way to do it is text Harvey, H-A-R-V-E-Y, to 90999. It'll be an instant, easy $10 donation to the American Red Cross. If you'd like to donate more, you can call 855-999-GIVE. Standard message and data rates apply.
You've seen this vehicle that they have in Texas. I didn't even know such a thing existed. It's almost like, it's almost in the tank family, and it's one of the only vehicles. There's some areas that are just so flooded out that this is like the only vehicle they can possibly use to get to people. But I'm watching this going, it looks like something from a futuristic movie. I didn't know such a thing existed, and I kept wondering, where does a municipality keep those things? Like, do we have those here in Chicago? It almost, I don't know if it's the Army that has it. I don't know who it belongs to, but they showed in Texas, they showed this vehicle that's going down the street, just kind of lumbering down a street, and it's gigantic.
It's a military surplus vehicle.
Is that what it is?
So I don't know if that reflects, you know, there's a program, and it's actually been in the news in the past week or so about extra military equipment that's not needed anymore going to police departments around the country. So maybe that's part of that, you know, they give the departments. And there's controversy there because the Obama administration scaled back a lot of that. If you remember in the days after Ferguson, there were complaints that local police departments were starting to look like military units because they, you know, had tanks and all of this stuff. So that program was reduced a little bit, thinking that, you know, the police department in Schaumburg doesn't necessarily need a rocket launcher or things like that.
Right.
And the Trump administration just reversed that restriction last week in many cases. Now, maybe this is a situation, if that's what this is, where sharing that comes in very helpful.
Mm-hmm. It actually has come in handy from two men at a Blue Springs landscaping business. A week after driving a high and heavy military vehicle to Overland Park with the intent of saving a family of seven trapped on the roof of their home by floodwaters, the pair were headed to Houston on Monday night to lend their assistance to people ravaged by Hurricane Harvey. It's a military surplus vehicle. It's called a heavy expanded mobility tactical truck. That would be I thought it had some cool name. Mm-mm. But no, heavy expanded mobility tactical truck. It has 8 52-inch wheels. It weighs in at 20 tons.
You're looking at a picture of it, so you can believe it. But when you see it operational, you can't believe it. It's just gigantic.
It can do an impressive 65 miles per hour on the highway, which seems crazy for a vehicle that large.
Under dry conditions. I mean, this thing was just kind of, you know, just kind of lumbering along, obviously, because of the flooding.
Right, but just on a dry highway, it can go 65 miles per hour.
Impressive.
And they arrived Tuesday morning to help people get out of the flooded areas.
So if they don't have this, what's their option? Is it only by boat or would it be a helicopter? I don't even know what they would. That's what they would use, right?
This particular vehicle can navigate water to a depth of about 7 feet.
Hmm.
Man, that's really impressive. The monster truck that has become this rescue vehicle is used by Dawson's Stonehenge Landscape and Exteriors to deliver materials for new swimming pools, landscaping, and masonry jobs. So it needs to be big and be able to transport heavy things. And on Monday, it was fitted with jet skis and a 25-man raft for the Houston mission. That's pretty amazing.
So do these landscapers say to local government, hey, if we can be of help, we have this vehicle? Or I don't even know what goes into them knowing.
They reached out to the local sheriff over there and said, you know, I've got several friends down there. Anything I can do to help out, we'll do it. And his girlfriend, this 32-year-old guy who owns the truck, let me get his first name. His last name is Scherf. And he said that his mother, Spencer Scherf, and Cyrus Dawson are the two guys who took this truck down here. And Scherf, 32, is an amateur weather buff who chases storms every spring. He said both his girlfriend and his mother tried to talk him out of the Houston trip, but that he and Dawson have put their minds to it. And that's when he said, I've got several friends down there, and if there's anything I can do, and it has definitely come in handy. A vehicle I've never seen before.
No, me neither. Good.
Wow.
Very heroic of them. Very nice. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's all kinds of things on today's show. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I have some good news, and I have some bad news. What do you want first?
Oh, I'm always under pressure when people ask that. You decide.
All right. The good news is a lot of people are donating to the American Red Cross to
that
help.
That is good news.
The victims of Hurricane Harvey. The bad news is we're giving you a text number to text Harvey to 90999. And when you do that, it's just a real easy $10 donation that will go on your cell phone bill. So it's bing, bang, boom, it's done. However, As you do that, as you text Harvey to 90999, it says, "Hello. Because of the overwhelming response to Hurricane Harvey, donations are taking longer than usual to process. If you'd like to join the queue to donate via text, you would then reply, continue." You just text that back to that number. Mm-hmm. "It may take up to 48 hours for you to receive a prompt to confirm your $10 donation."
You don't have to stay on the line for 48 hours.
Oh, no. They'll text you back and say, "You know, we got that you want to donate $10 to the rescue relief of Hurricane Harvey. Do you still want to do it?" And then you'd click yes or no.
All right.
So, no, you're not going
to. You don't have to hold on to the phone for.
Well, it's a text.
Yeah. It's quick and easy.
There's,
and Coach Q is
on.
Helping you, you said?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice of him.
So if you do this right now, your donation's not going to go through, but you can text continue, and then they will get back to you when they can and say, "Would you still like to proceed with this $10 donation?" And then you just click yes or no. But they are, they've put alternatively, if you are eager to make a gift now, you can visit a link that they put, which just takes you to redcross.org.
Oh, all right. That's easy.
And then you can reply, "Stop to unsubscribe," blah, blah, blah. But we're telling everybody to text Harvey to 90999. And evidently, that's the great news, is everyone's
a lot of
doing
people
it.
Want to help, yeah.
The bad news is they can't really keep up with it. So if you'd like to do it, you can follow the prompts that you will receive, or you can just go to redcross.org, which is a link within their text that you could go donate right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's done.
All right, good. You also found out that the vehicle we were just discussing, the futuristic vehicle that they're using to help save people, is made in a neighboring state, in Wisconsin?
Yes, someone texted us, and it's made in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And it is the Heavy Expanded Mobility Tactical Truck. I've gotten a couple of listeners who've texted. It's called the Hermit, but there's no R in it.
Oh.
And somebody said it's Hemt.
A Hemt?
Yeah, like H-E-M-T-T, a Hemt. It's built to stand up to the rapidly evolving challenges in the operational environment.
What does that mean?
It's strong. It's something that you're going to need.
So normally these are used, you said Army surplus normally, right?
Yes. Bring significant improvements in power, maintenance, and safety to the battlefield.
Oh, good.
It's 500 horsepower Caterpillar C15 engine, offers greater horsepower than its predecessor, so it can traverse the most challenging environments easier and more efficiently. This landscaping company that has one must have gotten a really good deal on it, or they make a lot of money at their landscaping business.
Does it say what they go for?
I don't have a price.
But just when you look at it, you say, because they don't, my guess is they don't sell that many of these. So that usually means the price is quite a bit higher when you're getting a specialty vehicle like this.
Yeah, I don't know if just you could go online and order one.
No. All right.
Were you thinking about it?
You just squashed my dream.
They
but
have
that's fine.
Different models.
I'd get the special edition one with the eagle on the front. The decal of the eagle.
My God, they have light tactical vehicles, medium tactical vehicles, mine-resistant, ambush-protected, which are MRAPs, and heavy tactical vehicles, many models of those.
Wow.
Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
They're more than just overalls, Wendy.
I loved my overalls.
The Oshkosh Bagosh?
Oh, yeah, Bagosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, B apostrophe gosh.
Yeah, I had the engineer pinstripe ones, the bib top.
Still in vogue.
Boy, they looked stupid on me, but boy, I liked them.
Yeah.
Hi, Judy. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. How are you?
We're okay. What's going on?
I was on Facebook this morning, and a notice came up that Facebook will match $1 million, and you can donate online through Facebook anywhere from $20 up.
Oh, that's good news. Wait, when do you look apprehensive
about this? I get nervous about things sometimes.
In case this is a rumor?
Yeah, I mean, no, but I mean, I know and trust the American Red Cross.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it on Facebook. I will look into that, but they make it easy to donate, huh?
Yes, and this was on the Facebook app. This was not, nobody sent me anything and says, "Oh, you can do this."
That seems more legit.
Yes, I thought so, and $1 million, I'm sure that, you know, people can donate and they should get to a million quickly.
That's excellent. Good.
That's pretty great.
Thank you for that information, Judy. Wendy is checking it out as we speak.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sure. Judy. We appreciate it. Why am I the checker?
I'm busy. I got stuff.
What are you doing?
Coloring.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. You know, I'm calling you from an antique landline phone. And if you just call 1-800-RED-CROSS, and it tells you which numbers to punch, and then it's an automatic donation.
Oh, that's easy enough.
It takes you 2 seconds.
You've already done this today?
Yeah. I did it yesterday.
Oh. Lori, thank you for doing that, and thanks for the information. That seems much easier, doesn't it?
It is. It's so easy. Right. Okay, take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much. There is a way to help. There were people on Facebook. There are various organizations. Patty Vasquez put a couple of fake ones up there because, seriously, you have to beware of where your money's going to, and the American Red Cross completely trust it, so...
Do you remember after September 11, there were so many it was insane how many people benefited because, you know, they saw a fireman walking around with boots and they're like, I got a boot. I'll walk around with a boot and see if I can get any money out of this.
How do people think like that?
I don't know. I can't even begin to imagine.
I really can't
either. To profit off something like that. All right. Yeah. So use a legitimate source. That's your best bet if you can. We'll take a quick break. Wendy, somebody famous has been fired, and I don't know if this is good. I think this is bad. I'll explain who it is.
Fingers are crossed.
It's not. Why, who do you want it to be? who are you hoping?
I'm not saying. All right, you're fired.
I'll divulge who has been fired, and we can mourn together. That's coming up next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hurricane Harvey urgently need your support. Your donation can help the American Red Cross provide warm meals, shelter, and hope to these families. Please donate today and go to redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS and you can donate to Hurricane Harvey relief efforts. Your support is critical. We can't do it without you.
That's so true. Wendy, a major firing. After 27 years, somebody whose name you will not recognize has been fired, and this is the beginning of the end. That's all I'm going to say. I'll tell you who it is in just a little bit. But first, Dan has some information for us. Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Great show. Just a little bit about government vehicles. The government has a lifespan on equipment and vehicles that they use, and so they don't want to have things in the field that could possibly endanger our security or the safety of our men and women that serve. So after a certain period of time, big trucks like this one are deemed surplus and sold through a variety of different government surplus sites. Most are available for purchase by the general public. Sites like the GSA, Government Service Administration, governmentdeals.org, they put items up that range from vehicles like this to Humvees, to Chevy Malibus, to airplanes, to ships, to lawnmowers. And you bid on them and you buy them. And that's probably what the landscape company did. They bought this government surplus. So they are out there for the public at a greatly reduced price off of, quote, retail. But you are buying... Oh, go ahead.
No, we're talking about the heavy expanded mobility tactical truck that Bill is interested in.
I want one.
Right, right. So those would have been used by National Guard units, would have been used at government locations, military locations around the world. And usually, again, when they're done, they need to dispose of them to replace them with the new generation of bus hours. And so that's when they are offered, as the government should. We need to recapture that asset and the value. So that's why they're out there, and kudos to those that use those to help others.
That's really great news.
Yeah. So if you want to buy one, you can buy one yourself. Probably get a great deal on it.
Oh.
Licensing, parking, registration.
that's the problem.
Probably a little costly.
Right.
It is possible.
Right.
Well, Dan, thank you for all that information. After all these years of shopping at the Army surplus stores to buy cool jackets, I never really put two and two together to realize that is what they don't need anymore.
Yeah, big stuff has to move too, so that's where it goes.
Well, thanks for knowing all this, Dan. Appreciate it.
Did you write those sites down? Because I could see you driving this.
I'm going to get one for myself, and you know, Kevin's leaving, and I don't know what to get him as a going away present, so I might get one and have it all tricked out for him.
It's already pretty tricked out.
Get some fuzzy dice and a retractable top on it.
If it can tow across the country, that'd be great.
Nice. I'm thinking about it, Kevin. There's no guarantees.
Are you gonna? I can't say the word on the air, but are you gonna get them those things that dangle from the back of the hitch?
Yes,
those should come standard on that. Actually,
I have not seen those in a while.
Oh, really? Because I see them maybe once or twice a month.
It used to be that you saw them every week.
Yep.
The truck.
Yep.
Yeah, and then it happens less and less.
Yeah, I am so glad that I pointed out the other day, boy, I haven't seen those truck things in a while, and I'm glad.
Yep.
We're growing up, Phil,
as
a society.
I don't know if that's true. Wendy, I have some tragic news. Please sit down.
I am.
Please stand up, because Alf Clausen has been fired.
Alf?
Alf Clausen.
The elf?
No, he's not. No.
Who eats cats?
No. You mean from the sitcom?
Yeah.
No. Not that Alf. No. The man, Alf Clausen, who has been doing...
Mr. Pickle?
No, he's not Mr. Pickle.
Well, there were Clausen Pickles.
No, but that's not Alf Clausen. Come on.
Who's Alf
He has been highly rewarded and decorated for the work he's been doing for the past 27 years. Those in the industry consider him, Alf Clausen, to be among the best that's ever been. And yet his bosses yesterday decided, enough of this. You, Alf Clausen, are without a job.
That's so tragic.
Isn't that awful?
Who is he and what does he do?
Elf Claw. Well, maybe this will help. Can I play a little sound bite?
Right.
See if this will help a little bit. Now, do you know who Alf Clausen is?
Well, I know Danny Elfman does the music.
Alf Clausen assisted Danny Elfman on this, the theme song, but in addition to the theme song, he has, for the past 27 years, provided all the music that you hear on The Simpsons. He's been decorated with the Emmy Award twice, been nominated many other times, but has won it twice. He's been doing that job, like I said, for 27 years, and yesterday he received a pink slip. He will no longer be working for
The Simpsons. Well, now I'm mad.
I am too.
For what reason?
You don't just fire Alf Clausen. Two-time Emmy Award winner Alf Clausen has been fired from The Simpsons after 27 years, providing music for Bart, Lisa, and company. Clausen told Variety that he received a call from Simpsons producer Richard Sakai that the company was seeking a different kind of music.
It's going to ruin the show.
That music means a lot to the show. It's
totally.
I know.
And boy, you had Alf and Elf.
Right.
Alf and Danny Elfman.
Right.
You've broken up the
team. You broke up the team of Alf and Elf. They are no longer. And he got sacked by a guy named Richard Sakai, so go figure that out. He would no longer...
So he's been composing music for the show for almost 30 years.
Yes.
Its whole run.
Yes. Yes.
How much work can be involved? I mean, they haven't changed the theme, right?
No, the theme remains the same, but if still you watch, there's so much...
The song remains the same. You're getting
the song remains the
up.
Same. There's a lot of incidental music that goes into each episode, and he has conducted it. They use a big orchestra on every... It talks about it in the story, but from the very beginning, Matt Groening said, I want a 27-piece orchestra. I'm sorry, a 35-piece orchestra. So he composes the music for that and helps...
I know, but so the music's like reaction shots or, you know, Homer walking down the street music.
Yeah.
Don't you think they've got a pretty good archive now?
Yes.
I guess, but it's still... The answer is yes. Without a doubt, they do. But that doesn't mean... His job may have gotten a little easier for that reason, but you still need somebody to do that. Somebody still has to orchestrate that. And he's done a great job over the years. Now, the reason they're saying behind the scenes is that Fox is lessening the budget for The Simpsons and other shows. So somebody's got to pay the price. In this case, it was Alf Clausen. Clausen... whose Emmy record includes 2 wins and another 21 nominations over the years. So he's been nominated out of the 27 years he's been there 21 out of 27 times. That's pretty amazing. Began in 1992. He has scored more than 560 episodes of the series. Started back in the 1990-91 season. He is believed to be the most nominated musician in the history of the Emmy Awards with a total of 30 nominations overall. He's also won 5 Annie Awards. How many Annie Awards have you won?
Not one.
Not me either.
Maybe and tomorrow.
The award. A good one.
All of those awards came for his Simpsons music. It's basically, Wendy, all he's been doing for the past 30 years. He's done other little side projects, but his heart and soul have gone into the Simpsons, and now, thanks but no thanks, you're not part of the team anymore.
No, they said what kind of different direction they're looking at?
Well, they're not saying that, but what everybody who knows anything about this situation is saying is they're cutting corners. The Simpsons has been around for, this will be its 28th year coming up. So they're cutting back a little bit. Somebody's got to take either a pay cut or be let go, and he's one of the guys they're letting go.
And Matt Groening is letting this happen?
Apparently. I don't know.
That is how you say the name, by the way.
Matt, yeah.
Matt Groening.
Matt Groening.
Isn't
Matt.
It looks like Groening.
I was at the Cubs game last night, and Gary Pressey has almost no work to do anymore there.
He's the organist for the Cubs.
Right, and they have all this now that, you know, they play...
The players are now allowed to pick their own walk-up songs.
I'm just wondering if this might be an opportunity.
Oh, move Gary Pressey into the Simpsons
Nancy
role.
Nancy Faust has been available for a while.
She's also open, yeah.
Not big demand for an organist.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
It's very sad. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
You are scared.
Yeah. True.
All right. You know me. I'm never prepared. I'm usually late before we're early. But this time we are early because it's a special month that's coming up, National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And guess what?
What?
It starts September 1st. We're not even there
that's
yet.
Tomorrow.
So we are just doing it well in advance. North Shore physician Dr. Brian Helfand is on the line with us. Hi, doctor.
How are you doing?
We're doing well.
Excellent, excellent.
I have to admit an embarrassing moment that happened on the radio with Bill many, many years ago. We were talking about National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and I didn't realize that I didn't have one. I know now, but this was more than 20 years ago.
Where can Wendy get one, Dr. Helfand? She needs one.
Exactly. I think everyone does. I think everyone does. But only men are special enough to have prostates. So, yeah. But that's what we want to educate people on, is that it is something that is very important, the prostate, for reproduction, because it makes the fluid that is necessary so that we can reproduce. On the other hand, after reproductive years, it really causes nothing but problems. It either enlarges in almost every guy, so that causes those urinary symptoms, or gets cancer. And that's really the focus of Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, is to make sure that people are aware of their cancer risk and their prostate.
Does every guy's prostate go bad eventually? Is it like a
go
sump pump?
Go bad.
Is it?
Well, you know, every man will be affected to some degree. At least 85-90% of men will have some problems. So we're all kind of doomed. But again, that's what makes us guys. But instead of just kind of ignoring and kind of dealing with a lot of the problems, which we're good at also as guys, we should, you know, kind of hit the nail on the head and hit it early to say, hey, we don't have to live like this. If it's urinary symptoms, but certainly to assess our cancer risk, we should all know our risk for cancer. We say know your numbers.
All right. So if a man goes to get a physical, at what age will your doctor probably check that area?
So there is really no hard and fast rules these days, and there is, unfortunately, some variability. But most primary care docs will start their screening and take a feel of the prostate, either starting age 40 to 45, just to get a baseline kind of feel. And they'll usually follow that up with a blood test called the prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, blood test.
And should that be followed up annually? And is it weird that my dentist did it to me?
Yeah, no. We encourage all physicians to, all types of doctors to take a look. But no, don't worry. you know,
I'm so sorry about him, Dr. Helfand.
Yeah,
I really am.
No. In my world, you're totally, we should hire you.
Good.
Well, it is, you know, we're acting like 12-year-old boys, but this is something that is uncomfortable on many levels, and it's something that needs to be talked about. So if we goof around, at least we're still talking about it.
That is 100% correct as well. Women are actually so much better about, you know, doing their kind of breast exams and their gynecologic exams, and even though it's just as uncomfortable, it has become so routine. We as men get a little bit shyer, and there is, you know, especially within certain, you know, racial groups, African Americans are tend to be even more of a taboo topic when we start doing digital exams and prostate cancer screening. But it doesn't change the fact that it's still a cancer and still kills many men, and as such, you know, it is important to get out there and get screened. Your dentist shouldn't be doing it,
nope.
but certainly your primary care doctor should. And yes, a baseline, at least in my world, should be around 40 or 45. Our many authoritative groups really suggest that routine annual screening perhaps should not begin until age 55, unless you are at higher risk or have an abnormal kind of baseline. So routine screening on an annual basis with that digital exam and PSA really for most men is probably safe until age 55. But for individuals who are at higher risk, whether they have a family history or they're African American or there's other problems, should begin maybe annual screening at much earlier times, perhaps either at age 40 or 45.
When you say a family history, my dad was fine, but I remember my maternal grandfather had some issues when he was much, much older. He was in his 80s, I think, when he had some problems. So does that put me at a higher risk?
It depends what he had problems with, but if it was prostate cancer, then that does impart some risk to you. So prostate cancer in particular is one of the more heritable, meaning genetic, out of all cancers.
Yeah.
And as such, that if you do have that family history, that it is important to discuss that with your physician. But you should also know as best you can the details around it. And these days we say you should not only know your family history of prostate cancer, meaning did anyone else, your father, your brother, your grandfather, have prostate cancer, but we also want to know did anyone else in the family have any breast cancer, mm-hmm. any colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and potentially related cancers, because those are also, for some men, associated with your risk of prostate cancer as well.
Okay.
So as best we can, we want everyone to know their family history.
North Shore physician Dr. Brian Helfand on the line with us. Bill, I won't get personal with you, but I know you're over 45.
Mm-hmm.
I know my husband's over 45, and I don't really talk prostate with him very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But what if these guys have not had an exam by their doctor? Is this something at their yearly physical that they should ask for? I mean, I know you don't want it, but is this something...
Yeah, I mean, these days there are so many things in medicine, and it's sometimes easy to get lost in the system, and that's even particularly true with all the healthcare changes and insurance changes, that a lot of men in particular become lost, and we always advocate that patients should be their biggest advocate, and as part of that, you know, knowledge is key, and so if you have not had, you know, if you are within the screening age. And you have not had a PSA and a digital exam, you should 100% bring this up with your physician and discuss about the risks and benefits of screening for prostate cancer.
Are there some symptoms out there, like frequent bathroom breaks? Are there things that might be a warning sign that there is an enlargement or a problem in the prostate?
Right. So before PSA, that's the blood test we use for prostate cancer screening, was routinely used, men would often come into the urologist and complains of either kind of increased urinary symptoms, meaning they go to the bathroom frequently or wake up at nighttime, et cetera, or they would have back pain. And so we'd always be concerned in those men that they had kind of advanced prostate cancer. Since the introduction of that PSA screening test, we are able to diagnose prostate cancer most often when it is confined to the prostate. So the vast majority of men who come in really are asymptomatic. They don't have any symptoms. They're not going to the bathroom more frequently or anything at all. But if you do have urinary symptoms, you should talk to about that with your physician, and they should help distinguish between your prostate cancer risk and also just that kind of benign growth that most men get, which causes those urinary symptoms, which is called benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH.
And I know the earlier cancer is detected, the better it is because your chance of treatment is more successful. What about prostate cancer? If found early, is it a pretty curable cancer?
It is often very curable, and screening is really the key to cure. All the data would suggest that since we have that screening blood test, the PSA, which is still controversial, amazingly enough, that the rates of death from prostate cancer has significantly gone down, up to 40% in many studies. So when caught early, prostate cancer is often very treatable. But it turns out also that not every prostate cancer needs to be treated.
Really?
So that even if you are found to have prostate cancer, and it is a non-aggressive, what we call a low-grade or low-stage cancer, and it seems to kind of follow a benign course, oftentimes we will kind of follow this actively over time by repeated exams and biopsies and things like that. So that's a whole nother level within prostate cancer, but it's important to understand that these days, that even if you have prostate cancer, not all of it is the aggressive form that can go on to spread and, more importantly, kill a man, and some of it we follow over time.
Doctor, you mentioned a little while ago that the PSAs are controversial. Why are they controversial?
PSA is controversial in the sense that it's a great test, but many things other than prostate cancer can cause that the number, the value you obtain from it to be high.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a big prostate, you can have inflammation, you can have recent sexual activity, exercise. I always say that you look at it the wrong way, we can get that PSA number to elevate.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, it's important to kind of follow trends over time. So that's where we're lucky enough that within the past 5 to 10 years, there are even newer tests mm-hmm. that we can now offer, which kind of better evaluate a man's risk of prostate cancer. So if you have an elevated PSA, I often use that as the first initial screen,
mm-hmm.
but there are other supplemental blood tests, such as the Prostate Health Index or the 4K score, which are also blood tests, but they better evaluate by measuring other molecules within a man's blood and tells me the risk of their true prostate cancer and even more importantly, aggressive prostate cancer risk.
Okay.
I don't know if this is a joke or not, but while we're goofing it up, we got a text. Is it a myth that frequent sexual intercourse can reduce the risk of prostate problems? And if so, can you call my wife?
Oh.
Well, I write prescriptions all the time.
Yeah.
So the truth is we don't really know. There was a study many years ago which suggested that men who were more sexually active had a decreased risk of prostate cancer.
Oh.
The truth is that everyone is so on board with those results that there's no reason to reproduce it. So we don't really know. It's never truly been validated. But I do say that there potentially is a decreased risk the more men are having sexual activity.
Look at that.
So, how about that?
All right, another question from the listeners, which I don't know if it's a joke or serious, but while we're on the topic, I know women can do a breast exam, a self-exam. Can men give themselves their own prostate exam?
Theoretically, I guess it would be possible. We don't recommend it. We don't recommend it. We usually say because it doesn't have to be done on a frequent basis that an annual visit with your primary care doctor is usually sufficient to do that digital exam part of it. And because it's usually paired with a blood test, that we just have them paired in the doctor's office together. But
yeah.
I guess theoretically you could. We just it is not recommended. Not
and
recommended.
Even women giving themselves breast self-exams, sometimes you're really missing things anyway. I mean, it's just best to get a doctor involved.
Sure.
Correct.
That makes
sense.
And then, Dr. Helfand, what about diet? How does that play into it? Are there any certain foods that you should avoid or eat more of that would help your prostate?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that's also a little controversial because what's good today in our diet sometimes is not good tomorrow. But I always tell people, and there's certainly accumulating evidence that would suggest that a heart-healthy diet that's low in carbohydrates generally promotes prostate health. So if you are eating a heart-healthy diet that's high in fruits and vegetables and fiber, low in simple carbohydrates, all that stuff that tastes good, cookies and all the stuff we all love, generally is somewhat protective for prostate cancer. So that's what we tell people today.
Boy, the carbohydrate has really turned into the devil, hasn't
it?
It has.
Yeah. All the good stuff, the pastas, the breads, although complex carbohydrates and fruits and vegetables are okay for you, correct?
They appear to be a lot better. They appear to be a lot better.
It's a crapshoot. I mean, really.
Wendy. Come on. The doctor on the line. What are you talking about?
I'm sorry.
I mean, and it's a sensitive area you just referred to. So, yeah.
There's about 20 things you said, Dr. Helfand, that I was giggling at and didn't want to do it on the air. We're like little babies here. But the bottom line is we need to talk about it. And September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. So we're talking about it. Get it checked. And best of luck to everyone. Thank you so much for your help on this.
My pleasure.
Thanks, doctor. Really appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Cubs won 17-3 last night.
What?
17-3.
What's going on with
them? They're just exploding. They're like pop rocks. However, here's some bad news, although maybe it's good news. You're a White Sox fan. Every other time this year that they have scored in double digits, they've lost the next day.
It's, you know, cyclical, Bill.
It's
they can't win every single game.
No, it's impossible to win every game, but you would think, like, whenever there's an outburst of run production like they had last night, and they've been doing it pretty often. They'll get 12, 13, 14, 17 runs.
Jeez, that's
a lot. For some reason the next day, oh, yeah, you should have seen the Pirates just waving white flags instead of Pirate flags last night.
Were they walking off the plank themselves?
Yes. Yes.
All right, so what is the standings of the Cubs baseball team this year now as they were last year at this time?
They're nowhere near as good record-wise as they were last year.
Think they're going to do the World Series again? Be winning that?
I do. Yes, I do.
Do you really?
Yes, I
do. Or are you just hopeful?
Nope. I think they will. This is the best time to get hot. The playoffs would be nice, too. And then the World Series, you would also want to... I would recommend
that's a must win
an equal amount of hotness in the playoffs and in the World Series. But right now, as the season's wrapping up and they're figuring out who to put where and what their batting order should be and who should pitch, they're looking good.
Bears are looking good. You got
to
admit.
I'm going to admit they're not. They're
not. Trubisky's putting
awful.
The biscuit in the basket tonight.
Yeah,
he's
starting. Get the start tonight, and I want. If I'm Bears management, I'm not, but if I was Bears management, that would be the guy I'd have starting for me all season.
Well,
they
that's
want
my
to wait
question.
Till next year.
Well, that's what they want to do, but come on. Listen, I know Mike Glennon was brought in as the starting quarterback and felt slighted when the Bears gave up a trade to get Mitch Trubisky earlier.
Yeah.
And I know he feels like he's got something, you know, coming up behind him. He does.
Yeah.
And if that inspires him to be good, then Mike Glennon should be the starting quarterback. But tell me if Mitch Trubisky is doing better starting quarterback or not, aren't they going to put Mitch Trubisky in?
You would hope. Sometimes the Bears go a little bit against the grain of logic. Like I would play, if I'm the Bears coach, Abe Gibron, I put in the best guy. I don't worry about the politics of it. I go, this is the best guy. And Trubisky seems, I mean, it's very early on, and we've only played three practice games with these three quarterbacks. He seems to be the best guy, but they want to save him until next year for some weird reason.
If Glennon's doing well, then fine. Save Trubisky for next year.
You
I got to work
swore.
On his name. No, I didn't.
You swore.
I was thinking
that
about
was
me.
Rude.
But then you save him for next year, but you got to go with who's performing, don't
right.
you? I mean,
yes.
even though they promised him?
Yeah.
What's a promise?
There's no such thing as promises in sports. Play the best guy.
That's it. I
so
can't
we'll
wait.
See what happens.
Go Bears.
All right, we'll see what happens.
I just saw that Trubisky's jersey is selling bigger and better than Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford.
How about that?
How does that happen?
I guess they fans are so optimistic
hopeful?
About
yes.
the future.
That's exactly what it is. And did you see Aaron Rodgers' mustache, by the way, Kim?
Yes.
What do you think?
Kim's a Packers fan.
Big Packers fan. He could shave.
Yeah. Very peculiar
Is it like
mustache.
A 70s bed?
Yeah.
I got
to
look.
It sort of looks like an Anchorman kind of a thing going on.
Yeah.
What is he doing?
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Kim will give you the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Look who's here bopping his head.
It's Patrick McDonald, our head bopping friend. He's the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. Visit the website, ChicagoFilmTour.com.
You want to do that over a Labor Day weekend.
Is that a good time to go?
It is.
How
a good
come?
Time
what,
to go?
What makes that the good time to go?
Because we're, you know, we're looking to fill the bus.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Good for business.
Yes, it is.
I just read this, Patrick, and you might have to explain this to me because this is bad news for Hollywood.
Yeah.
This summer's box office was abysmally bad. The worst in years.
The worst since...
Because why?
Well, maybe we've seen the tipping point. Maybe this summer is the tipping point of all our entertainment choices finally getting the movies. The movies are feeling the effect of everything else that we can turn to during our summer entertainment hours. In a sense, you know, we were just talking about a new television show that's hot, and it's like there are more choices than ever before. And the movies historically are just kind of coasting on what they've always done, you know, with their infrastructure and their business plans and everything. And this is the first summer since 2006, Cry Me a River, that they didn't make $4 billion.
Yeah.
So,
they still made money.
Yes.
They just didn't make anywhere near what they usually made. But now here's a curious parallel to that. I just read a story about how some TV stations, most notably Hallmark, the Hallmark Channel, has had their best year ever, and they say it's very easy to explain because of the political climate. People are looking for escapism, and
soft
we're providing
and fuzzy. Yeah.
Soft
that's what they
fuzzy.
Want.
Yeah,
interesting.
So
yes.
why would a cable channel like Hallmark benefit so dramatically from the political climate? Whereas movies, you go, well, people if they're looking for escapism, where better to go than to see a movie? Why wouldn't they also benefit?
It's perhaps that. You don't escape at the movies as much. The subject matter is, you know, when you talk about the tentpole movies, you're talking about extreme action, extreme, you know, of everything to draw on an audience. We were just talking about The Hitman's Bodyguard a few weeks ago. Again, I see that movie, and then when we're sitting in the theater and you're just reminded of the outside world, so... Maybe it's just because the movies and their subject matter have a creeping effect on what's happening in our reality.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting social scientists again.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but also maybe because all it is now, it seems, is superhero movies.
Yes. I mean, I think it's a tipping point. It's like, well, what's their next strategy? Because obviously we're going to get a ton more of superheroes next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And will people keep showing up in droves? I mean, you know, the top movies were Guardians of the Galaxy superhero movie, Wonder Woman superhero movie, Spider-Man Homecoming superhero movie. The only one in the top four. And this was the least reviewed of all the Despicable Me's. Despicable Me 3 was number 3 with $254 million in domestic
so it's all
office.
Either sequels or superhero movies or superhero movie sequels. Those are your top movies.
Yeah, and as I said, they go with the same business model. They go with what's hot, and you know you have to plan out your production schedules years in advance.
Yeah.
So then you're caught unawares if you come up with a summer that suddenly that isn't interesting anymore.
Right. It used to be, I can't speak for you, but I used to see what movies would be coming out over the summer, and I'd say to myself, well, here's a movie that can't possibly miss. There's going to be a number one hit. People are going to line up around the block to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I'll use as an example was this Luc Besson movie, the sci-fi movie about this planet that brought in people from all these other galaxies together. And I went, well, who wouldn't go see that? It looks great.
Valerian
and
it
died
city
a very fast, ugly death.
Just had no familiarity in the United States. I don't know what they were thinking. Fantasy is one thing, but familiarity is another. And I think the American strategy is familiarity breeds box office.
Mm-hmm.
And you know
they want an audience walking into the theater already knowing what's what and who's who.
We know who Wonder Woman is.
Yeah,
we were introduced to Guardians of the Galaxy a few summers ago,
but
that was a superhero. So, well, let's just go see the latest superhero movie. Now, with the popularity of Star Wars... It may have been a marketing issue with Valerian. I don't know. This was a very popular comic book in France, and they were really anticipating this this movie there. I don't know if it overperformed there or underperformed, but here it was a total flop. a toll bar.
All right. With it being a Labor Day, a holiday weekend, yes, the end of summer, I would have expected some big blockbusters coming out, but no.
I don't get it either. I was saying earlier to someone about I don't get the strategy of releasing films anymore. You would expect on a three-day holiday weekend that there would be at least one
or
notable
more
film, yeah, and yeah, there is nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, unless
a
you want to go
small
see
movies.
Tulip Fever, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I watched one independent film this week, so I'd have something to go on the air with, but
yeah,
but the biggest release this weekend is The Close Encounters of a Third Kind.
The re-release.
Re-release.
Yeah.
Which, you know, how many versions of that? Somebody was telling me there were five versions of that film.
Oh, really?
Because you remember this original, and then 2 years later,
edition.
He did the special edition. And then when he brought out the VHSs, DVDs, that sort of thing, he would keep adding footage, subtracting yeah it. So this is a amalgamation of what they've, I think, found has been successful in you know, the various re-releases and redos, and it's pretty crisp, 135 minutes, and it was very enjoyable.
So on a weekend like this, getting back to Wendy's original question,
yes,
you have a holiday weekend,
yes,
and you say, if you're a movie company and you look at the landscape of what's coming out, you
right
say to yourself, well, this is easy pickings. Let's just throw out a big movie this weekend.
Yeah.
And I also want to throw this in. Movie companies now are planning 2 years in advance. Like, they'll take a
yep
date a year and a half to 2 years in advance and say, we're staking our claim to this particular date. Why would they let a big holiday just go without?
Somebody from the industry has to come in and explain this. I am perplexed, because you can counter program too. If you have something big tentpole, mm-hmm, you know, ish, like, why wouldn't The Dark Tower come out this weekend, mm-hmm, for example? It came out in the wastelands of like early August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you market towards that holiday weekend thing, and then it can perform against your Oscar films
right
that are coming out in September. I don't know.
But that's,
you know,
another good example. People have been looking forward to this movie for 12 years,
yes,
Dark Tower,
yes,
and then it came out, and it just fizzled.
Yeah, it's one of the big flops.
Yeah.
It is one of the big flops. And but a lot of the movies that we think were flops, like The Mummy, did perform overseas, and Transformers.
Yeah.
I mean, their haul is like close to 600 million.
Jeez.
Just overseas, or globally, if you combine everything.
It's a lot of money. I'm not feeling sorry for the movie
right
industry.
Right, right. You can't feel sorry for them. Yeah, they didn't make $4 billion this year. But, you know, the infrastructure has grown to create this monster. And now, if suddenly nobody's going to go to the movies, then they've got trouble in River City because they've got this infrastructure. I think it's ridiculous to have a $200 million movie, but you know, I'm not the generation that goes and sees them.
Yeah.
So,
since you brought up The Mummy,
yes,
if you're Tom Cruise, are you looking for any script that doesn't include you being on some sort of aircraft that's about to crash, or falling off of a huge building, or just punching a guy because you don't like the way he looks? Every time, I can't tell the difference between any Tom Cruise movie anymore.
Yeah, and he's like, does he sleep in a hyperbolic chamber to keep his looks?
Right.
I mean, he's 56
I like
years
him.
Old.
I think when
I do
you
too
give him a good script, he's really a very engaging actor. But every time I'm sitting in a movie and they show a coming attraction, I go, I think I've seen this. Haven't I seen this?
Well, also, too, you know, when I do the tour, we always pass by Belmont Harbor, and that's where he got his start.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that is he is wearing the tightest pants you can absolutely imagine in that scene.
Yeah.
When he goes into the drink.
Yeah.
Who's the U-boat commander?
Yeah. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Patrick McDonald is here. There's all kinds of great movies to not see this weekend.
Yeah.
He'll tell you what they aren't. That's coming up next. It's Bill Leffen and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leffen and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Patrick McDonald. Patrick is a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide for Chicago Film Tour. Visit ChicagoFilmTour.com or call them at 312-593-4455. All right, with the summer drawing to a close, we were just talking, it's been kind of a haphazard summer in terms of which films did well. Give us your top five. Now, this is on the merits of just being good movies.
Yes,
and do me a favor. Go 5 to 1. Build it up. Start
right,
at the fifth.
Right.
Is that
I'll
right?
start with the fifth being Dunkirk. I thought it was a real symphony of a movie. The soundtrack goes and sways throughout the entire picture. Now, a lot of people have been complaining about the sound mix because most movies don't have a constant soundtrack anymore. You rarely see it. And so,
what does that mean?
That means the dialogue was hard to hear. There's not a lot of dialogue in it, but you know, with the balance of the symphony going on in the background, you're like, what?
Huh? Yeah.
You know, so
that's aggravating.
Yeah, it was aggravating.
Patrick, I rarely have a problem with that in the theater, but I found on Blu-ray DVD releases, sometimes they don't mix it properly, that the sound effects or music will be way louder than the dialogue. Mm-hmm. But I've not had the problem in theaters, but you say in theaters people were complaining.
Yes, in theaters people were complaining about Dunkirk. Number four, The Beguiled, the director Sofia Coppola. Of course, Nicole Kidman, Colin Farrell. I just like the fact that it was about birds do it, bees do it, and you know there was nothing.
The original was Clint Eastwood.
Yes,
is it as good as the original?
Because we talked about this. I think we talked about the you know, I've not seen the Eastwood one.
Oh,
I'm curious about it now because
very disturbing movie.
Well, and this one is disturbing too. And they took the slave element out of it, which they had in the Eastwood one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So that was your
fourth
best of the summer.
Yes, that was my fourth best. The third best was a small independent film called The Hero with Sam Elliott. Have you heard of this one?
Heard of it, but didn't see it.
Yeah, Sam Elliott plays Sam Elliott, in a sense, a version of him, where he does the voiceover and all that stuff.
He would be your most rugged of old cowboys.
Right.
Right?
Right. And he's an old cowboy actor who's kind of just gone to voiceover because nobody makes Westerns anymore. He's divorced. He gets stoned a lot. And finds out he has a diagnosis of a disease that makes him reassess everything. And this reassessment journey is wonderful. Just simple, beautiful redemption stuff.
I like him. I don't see him in enough things. Whenever he shows up in a movie or a TV show, I always go, now we're talking.
Yep,
this guy's good at what he does.
There's a few actors who are like that, and he definitely is one of them. Now, this is the one and two I had a little problem with, but I'm going to go to Baby Driver because I saw it twice, so I'll give that the two. When I was over the 4th of July holiday, I rescued my brother-in-law, who's a big film buff but never gets to see movies because he's raising kids and everything. I rescued him and forced him to go to this small theater to watch it. He was just enthralled, and I was enthralled again. So Baby Driver, number two, and I'm giving it to Wonder Woman.
Best movie of the summer, Wonder Woman.
Of the summer.
What was James Cameron whining about with the Wonder Woman? I saw that in the news.
This is interesting. I did look up the story before I came on because I thought maybe we would talk about it. Cameron was comparing her to Sarah Connor. And in saying that, he said that Wonder Woman was an objectification as opposed to Sarah Connor, who is just a strong woman on her own. Not so much beauty and object, but just toughness. Now, the remarks got misinterpreted a bit, but you know, he's sort of a hypocrite, and he's Cameron will never win awards for winning friends and influencing people. But he got into a Twitter war with Patty Jenkins, the director, who is so, you know, she's so enthralled that the film's successful because, again, it's a bridge. It's a bridge to other things for women directors, for women-centric stories. And
but couldn't you also compare that character to Ripley and Aliens? I mean, there's so many different women, strong women that took charge.
Right.
You could make that same comparison if you wanted to, if you needed to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is a superhero. And we're inundated with superheroes, but we are not inundated with women superheroes, except for, you know, the Avengers and in supporting roles. So this is a shot across the bow. And I think Cameron's remarks were slightly misinterpreted, but he did say them, and he had to have the reply by Patty Jenkins. And I think both Twitter things have merit, I guess.
Real quickly, so
yes.
Those are your top five of the summer.
Yes.
Again, the number one, Wonder Woman,
which
did so well. The Leonard Skinner movie that they've been talking about on and off and on and off and on and off is off again.
Very interesting. This is for fans of litigation. basically, or contractual things. They started this movie. It was to be called Street Survivor, the true story of the Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash. And it's about the one, the drummer who survived, Artemus Pyle. So essentially, it was going to be his story. But what happened in 1988 is that the group got together and they contractually said that they will, they have final approval on anything that is their story. The production went fully ahead because it was the drummer's story. Well, it turns out the script got leaked to the band. They said
the Van Zants.
There's the Van Zants, and there's too much Lynyrd Skynyrd in it, and it has been legally blocked.
So it's been shut down. But good news, the Queen movie, which has also been on again, off again, is on again.
All right. So,
so they will make that.
But
that,
who's playing Freddie Mercury again? I can't remember.
It was going to be
Borat. Sacha Baron Cohen originally, but then they started shooting and nobody was happy, so they pulled he pulled out or they fired him. Yeah.
This was a and did they actually lend some stuff on that?
Yeah.
Wow, because this was it was in this Lynyrd Skynyrd article as well that the Queen didn't approve of what was happening.
Oh.
Apparently.
Right. I remember hearing that.
Why the plug was pulled there too, because again, the group had absolute rights to their story.
Right.
Same with Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's very interesting.
What
man.
About the Dexys Midnight Runners movie? Is that
you will be the only one viewing
that. I
want
to see that. Light, I already bought a ticket to that. All right. That's Patrick MacDonald. Yeah. HollywoodChicago.com is the website. Also, ChicagoFilmTour.com. He says there's openings this weekend if you'd like to go around Chicago and see where all the best films have been made. 312-593-4455. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks,
Patrick. He's on Fox 32.
He's on Fox 32. Just lurking in the background whenever there's a news story.
Yes.
We'll take a quick break and find out what Steve has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.